Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. And Rosenbaum Media Group, a digital communications agency integrating high-definition video into PR, marketing, advertising, and social media campaigns. Big-picture thinking for local and national clients. RosenbaumMedia.com. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk. Pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project is underway. We have the opportunity for you to hear some commentary, analysis, and if we're lucky, a little insight into the media issues of the week. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Rosemary Armeo from the University of Albany.
Hello.
Long-time investigative journalist, now here in her back in her hometown. How about that? And Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, columnist, commentator, political scientist, et cetera, et cetera.
I wanted to ask you something, Rex.
Did you?
Do you think newspapers are better than radio?
And yeah.
I think newspapers.
Basically, I feel pretty self-righteous
and
about this.
And they're off.
can you doubt it? Yeah, absolutely. No. I think, actually, you know, there's no real journalism done on radio except on public radio these days. Very little done on the commercial side. But there is some really fine journalism being done on the radio through the publicly supported radio stations.
Listen, folks, every time he says something nice, it means you're going to get clobbered. Go ahead, finish the sentence.
Well, most of the original reporting, of course, as we've discussed, comes from print. There was a study done in Baltimore 2 years ago that found that two-thirds of all of the enterprise reporting in the city, when you look at all of the media across various purposes, came from the Baltimore Sun, of which Rosemary is an alum, as a matter of fact. And I think that's typical. I would say that, in fact, I'd say the percentage is higher in the capital region, the percentage of enterprise reporting, that is stuff that's not just mimicking press releases, comes from the print side. So,
and the wonderful reporting that is done, for example, NPR's investigative unit, National Investigative Unit, is just top-notch. But Margot Williams, its director, Laura Sullivan, its star, are all newspapers. Paper trained. They have jobs in radio because there are no jobs in newspapers anymore.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I do think Rex has a point, and I think it's all going to change now. We are going to the point where, as we all know, newspapers are having a very rough time of it. They don't have the same number of employees. They don't have the same resources they did. But I think the tradition has always been that the newspapers break it and that the electronic media goes with it.
And I believe, of course, that the legacy enterprises that publish newspapers are going to survive in some form. I think that we will have, I mean, that's why we're investing in a new press here in Albany.
You keep talking about
that. We may be different, well, because we're doing that alongside all of the digital stuff we're doing. There are huge challenges, you know. Right now, the biggest challenge that we're confronting is that mobile is taking off. 80% of Americans now have smartphones. Isn't that interesting?
I work in a college classroom. No news. That is no news to us there. We see it.
Students, and yet, are we going to be able to deliver it on those smartphones without some sort of a good revenue stream? Yeah, Dr. Shartok's turning off his.
I am. But I wanted to ask you something. Since we've all agreed, you know, that most of this reporting, you know, originally comes from the written press. But from a personal perspective, do you think that makes you better than me?
Yeah.
I thought so.
No,
of course not. It's not about competition, Alan. It's all about trying to seek the truth and report it fully. And all
and so get the and so basin.
Right. What
I wanted to ask you, Rex, about this article on a study done by the Pew Foundation, of course. They do all the studies. Looking at four newspaper organizations that have come up with new revenue and are doing really well. And I read it looking for hope. And they're really kind of I'm sorry, they're really small newspapers, yeah. And their business venture seems so weak and uninteresting. It's not news. Does that depress you to read this?
Somewhat, yes, because, you know, they're talking about ad sales reorganization at a little paper in Naples, Florida, digital marketing agency homegrown in the Press Democrat in Santa Rosa, California. We do that, you know. We are finding that our fastest growing revenue stream actually is digital marketing. It is search engine optimization and search engine marketing, which our sales team sells. I mean, I barely understand this stuff, but it is where our sales force is able to bring in additional revenue. And so that's fine. Whatever revenue it is that they're going to do to support our journalism, I'm happy for that.
But don't you think that part of any enterprise, whether it's radio or television or newspapers, is leadership? That if you get a talented leader who's charismatic, you know, who knows what they're doing and who really goes into a community and, you know, sets down roots, that can be the difference.
Partly. But I do think that even however great an editor or publisher may be, a general manager of a TV station, you know, there are just certain demographic trends that you can't argue with.
No.
And part of it, too, is the significant loss. I think that it goes to this question of the loss of confidence in our public institutions in general. People don't care about government as much as they used to.
No.
Therefore, why would they pay attention to the media that covers the public institutions? People are just basically washing their hands of everything and becoming more ignorant. Mm. And that is just hard for us to deal with because we kind of depend upon an educated populace.
Well, you know, we have this program called Vox Pop, and we can always tell, based on what we're going to do, how many calls we're going to get. So if it's on yesterday's State of the State by Governor Andrew Cuomo, yawn. I mean, in terms of, you know, you got to really fight to keep those lights on. Whereas if you go on and say, what about them Mets?
Yeah.
You know, it comes from all over.
But it was ever so, even when newspapers were in a heyday, that sports were a driver. That's not the problem. I mean, I want to switch, though. I think Rex is right, but Alan, your point is also valid. I would love to see a newspaper go down in flames because they were bold and took strong stands and tried new things that no one ever did before. And as newspapers have been in decline, we've been in the middle of it. They've gotten more and more careful and conservative. They don't offend anyone. They're boring.
Yeah.
And they're losing readers just because they're being careful.
You know,
go out in a blaze.
Who went out in a blaze? Remember PM. This is, Allen's era in New York City.
Yes, I'm very old.
The Ralph Ingersoll newspaper in New York City that was exactly that. It was bold and same thing. The New York Post was dying under Dorothy Schiff when it was a liberal paper until it was picked up by Rupert Murdoch, turned conservative, and now it is still losing money as
tons of
by
money
itself,
yeah.
But it's surviving as an arm, an important arm, I think, of this enterprise.
The Pew needs to do a study on them rather than the ones who do digital management and reorganization, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it's kind of hard.
I still like to think of news as a business different from the rest.
Do you?
I'd like to.
Well, yeah.
giving me a job, but
what a lovely concept that is.
Well, it also must be so interesting for you, Rosemary, to be a professor teaching this stuff as opposed to a practitioner. You still keep your hand in, of course, but as a practitioner, your primary responsibility is an educator. So how do you educate about something that is going down?
Yeah, I think about this all the time. I mean, the trick is you have to find, Rex, you talk about this all the time, you have to find the values of the legacy press, a word I hate because it makes us sound even older than we are. but the values of the legacy press and how you move those forward. So what do you have to still know that we know from the old days to put news on a mobile phone? You know, are the ethics the same? What's a story? My students, you know, you have to teach them what a story is, how you find it, how you prove it. If you think something is true, that's a whole lot different than writing and showing that it's true.
Should we stay with the mobile thing for just a second? Since everybody gets their news on their mobile phone, or a lot of people.
Well, they get information.
Yeah.
They're not necessarily getting news. That's the problem.
Right.
People are turning to it for information, and the trend line suggests that people are going to spend an increasing share of hours, that the amount of time people spend on their mobile devices will grow by 10-fold between 2012 and 2016.
Yeah, but what are the implications of that?
Yeah.
So I, for example, have my New York Times app, and I go on again and again and again during the day. I just keep checking it, and they keep changing it. So from that perspective, that's where the action is.
And that is one of the important things that Rosemary needs to be teaching, is how to think quickly, absorb quickly. That's one of the old skills of journalism, or write quickly.
This is the same as the wire service deals that I started, and you update all the time. You have to beat the AP, so you're going to come out with the new development. What's new today is that people don't just want to read what the New York Times has to say. They want to comment to each other and among themselves about it. Yeah. The interactivity is really new.
Well, the New York Times allows them to do that. To
exactly. Yeah. And Facebook does, and Twitter does, a whole lot of different media do. And the students, you know, they love. A colleague at UAlbany, I have to tell you about this, did a wonderful experiment, Lainey Salisbury, in a beginning journalism class. She made the students go 48 hours with no media. They were allowed to read newspapers, but they couldn't watch TV, do Twitter, Facebook. They were allowed to turn on their cell phones if they had to make a call and then turn it right off. And then they had to write about it.
Write about what? I'm sorry.
Write about going
being without
media less. Okay. And she describes the papers as rather desperate and in the language of addiction and withdrawal. You know, some students said, well, I just didn't know what to do with myself. So I went to the gym. I feel so much healthier. I'm going to change
my
life. And others said, how could you do this? And they broke, you know, after like 20 hours, they couldn't do it anymore. And they had to turn on a phone.
Absolutely.
Media crack.
This is good. We want them to be addicted to information. This is great. But
so how do you take? The trick is, okay, you grew up. My students, you grew up in this. You're part of it. How do we channel that for news?
And what kind of news?
What kind of stories?
Always debating this. Now, there was a big issue about the New York Times this week, wasn't there?
Having to do with the paywall change, right?
Yes.
Because they made the paywall less permeable. Wait, and before we do that, though, you need to take a drink of water.
Excuse me. That's funny.
My favorite media story of the week. Poor, poor Mark Rubio. I feel for him. You know, I have sons. I could feel that young man's just... I didn't really like his message, I got to say. I thought Obama did great. And then this young man comes in who is going to give the answer. He's on the cover of Time magazine as the savior of the Republican Party.
Right.
And he's done in by sweat and thirst. It's so sad.
Now, explain it to everybody because they may not know.
Okay. Giving the response to the State of the Union address, poor Senator Marco Rubio had a Nixon moment where he was dripping sweat. And he did sort of an awkward lean slightly off camera while keeping his eye on the camera to grab a bottle of water and take a swig. And that's all that anybody's talking about. The media issue of this is, why does this become such a big deal?
I know, I'm fascinated. I keep thinking, you know, we all have done a fair amount of public speaking, and you know that if you have the audience right in front of you, if you can't read something because your glasses, you know, fall down in the end of your nose or you needed a drink, you kind of just say, oh, excuse me, you know, sorry, I'm getting old. And people laugh and you go on. But on TV, you just don't have that opportunity at all. So it is like Nixon, who was done in by beard, by a growth of his on his face. You know,
remember the title of Dan Rather's first memoir is The Camera Never Blinks.
Right.
And that is actually true. You know, people are constantly, and people expect perfection. This is why when people are talking about television newscasters, they focus on the hair, on the anchor woman, you know.
Right.
It's stupid. But the fact is.
But it also is really well known. Rubio was really done in by his prep people who could have, as some commentators said, just put a big old glass of water on a desk in front of him. If he had reached down and taken a sip of that, it would have been, you know, would have been fine.
This is the bright light of the Republican Party. Look, they got slaughtered among Hispanic voters. They thought if this guy, well, they were going to give the Hispanic guy from Florida, the senator, the chance to do well. And they put him up there right after the president. And the president, as you say, Rosemary, was
better than ever before.
And when he yelled, they deserve a vote.
That was great.
And the people were screaming. Now this guy comes. And frankly, he sounds a little bit like a junior high school kid reading a paper. Quite shaky, sounds very young. He doesn't sound like he has a lot of gravitas. And I got an email from a regular correspondent who said, is this the best they've got?
Yeah, Bobby Jindal, you remember, did the same thing last year. And also a bright light in the Republican Party. And he got a shot and came off very stiff and scared and just kind of, you know, dumb sounding.
But logically, I think the Republicans thought they could fool the American people. I mean, here comes this guy and he says, well, we have to do better on this and this, but it still sounds very restrictive.
I think the Republicans have a really hard task right now
because they
have been very anti-immigration and they see the demographics and realize they have to change and they just aren't all the way there.
And
Rubio actually was pretty logical. He is an immigrant himself.
Sure.
His mother has told him don't hurt the immigrants.
But you know, we're talking about the difference between print and digital or electronic. Of course, this comes off much better in print because you're not looking at that kind kind of thing. Right. And this is why television is either, you could say it's either the great equalizer, or you could say that it values show business and the props of things. How can you compete against the power of the State of the Union address with the Congress standing and the pomp of the presidency and everything? And then suddenly here's a guy in a little room.
All by himself. With no water.
But so if you look at the words themselves, I'm sure that Rubio came off better.
As a Fox before the speech has said that Rubio had a very strong speech. We'll see how he delivers it. And that was totally the story of the evening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. But of course, as every political scientist and journalist teacher knows, and I hope that you don't throw up when I say this one more time, Nixon lost on the television and won on the radio, or all the polling said people would listen to him on the radio, thought he won.
Exactly. Yeah. But, you know, that's like many years ago now. And what happened to all these political operatives who are supposed to know that? We know it. How come they didn't and help their candidate?
Yeah, that's true, Rosemary. You're exactly right.
So, but we were about to talk about the Times paywall. Before we had to stop for a little drink of water here.
Yes, so we were.
If you're, by the way, just joining us, it's the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Rex Smith here. Howdy do. So anyway, so the Times has tightened its paywall. It used to be more permeable.
Yeah, and they caught me. I've sent in my credit card number. Yes, I'm now an official.
So how do you get on to the New York Times thing? You have to either have a subscription, right? In which case you're allowed to be
right. Or you have to click on. They have an online purchasing plan.
Yeah,
you pick your.
Well, I've had it all along because
I know you keep boasting about that. I always was kind of proud that I could get around the paywall, and now they've tightened
the
it.
The interesting thing is they did this intentionally. They knew that the paywall could be pierced, but now they've decided that it is popular enough. You know, as I mentioned. Last week, they've actually increased Sunday print circulation because of the paywall. They're finding that people are buying their Sunday print product in order to have basically all areas access so they can get behind the paywall.
That's so interesting. That's really true of the Shartoks. I don't buy the paper during the week because I have this thing.
But we
buy that Sunday Times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
I'm happy because many of the futurists who I think led us into this trouble warned that no paywalls will never work. We've given away the content.
But they are, right?
I think yes, at least for some brands. You know, the New York Times is a certain brand. I don't know if it'll work for every newspaper.
Well, that's right. So we have to really ask Rex what they're up to because he's been our sort of canary in the coal mine here all along. And for a while, in the very beginning, I thought he said, people are going to get this for free, and we have our doubt about it.
After you give it away free, how can you start charging?
Yeah.
What do you think
and
now?
Wait, I'm not done yet. And then I'm not done in trying to embarrass him yet. And then...
He's doing a pre-buttle, it's called, you know.
And then we started hearing about the value of paywalls and, you know, and the rest. And some papers like, what is it, Digital First? Is that what they're calling that corporation, Digital First? I think they are beginning to look at this. But when I said the New York Times is doing so well this morning in the office before we came in here, Rex got what could only be described as a tight little smile around his face. Which could only be said, I know something that you don't know.
Well, so now that part is true. But aside from that, well, you know, newspapers did, everybody embraced, not just newspapers, but every entity embraced free access to information. Those who initially moved to put paywalls around their work found that people were avoiding them, and the New York Times itself found out 5 years ago when they introduced whatever that was called, when they put Marine Dowd and others behind the paywall, that wasn't working.
Special content was behind
that. And now it's just that the marketplace has matured. And people are beginning to recognize that you can pay for it. If you want access to something, you're going to have to pay for it. The same thing happened in television. Initially, cable television took quite a while to catch on, and now everybody pays for television. Well, not everybody, but certainly.
A lot of people do, and are watching the cable channel quite often. That's all I look at. I watch
Absolutely.
Like USA Today. And
so I think that's true. But what is going to be fundamental, and it's going to affect WAMC as well, of course, is are people going to continue to turn to you for content if they can get it free elsewhere? So you have to generate unique content that people are going to be willing to pay for or turn to, right?
I mean,
why else would people turn to WAMC? If they can, when the time comes when all American cars are equipped with digital access to the web, they'll get their NPR program that way, right, and bypass you.
Well, some will and some won't. It depends on what local content means.
Right,
exactly. But that's not all. We're also seeing cars being developed That are not only hooked up to the internet, but are going to drive themselves.
Yeah.
I want one of those.
And when you get a car that will take, when you get a car that'll take you to Pittsburgh, there is really no reason, law to say, that you can't be watching television in your car.
Right.
And
Pittsburgh?
No, on your way from Albany to Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Why would anybody go to Pittsburgh?
Why would anybody go to Pittsburgh?
Where you walk up and down beneath the clock every night.
Fine newspaper there, but, you know, actually, in this conference that I was at the other day where I was
another conference?
No, it's the same one. I just learned a lot from it. But the guy who is the expert on mobile technology threw up a slide showing design in the cars of the future where there are screens all over the place and saying, you know, as people have to pay less attention to the road, they are going to be paying more. And even in the back seats, of course, there are going to be laptops for everybody.
This is not good news for FM.
No. No, probably not. No. But
it's probably not good news for driving on highways either.
Well, not if the R2-D2 will drive the car for you. What do you care?
Well, that's true.
What can you do?
I want one of those,
That's one of the great Rex sayings.
What can you do?
What can you do?
Well, you know, we're trying. You know, we really believe, if you want to look at the contrast and see how different, how nobody really knows what the right thing to do is, just look at the difference between Syracuse and Albany. In Syracuse, where Advanced Publications, which is a family-owned company, like Hearst, my company has taken the Syracuse daily newspaper down to 3 days a week, really, for home distribution, and they put out a little newsstand product, a very minor product, but basically they're saying print is a very limited channel for them. We are doing the opposite, of course. You know, we're building this press. We believe that we're going to have print for a long time to come, albeit in smaller newspapers.
So we'll find out who's stupid.
We will see. Yeah, I think we will. That's an interesting notion. So, and I'm not going to be around long enough to, you know, to find out.
What are you talking about? You're a young man.
Well, yes, I believe that's true, Alan, but I think it'll be a few years. There are enough newspaper readers my age and slightly below and above to sustain print for a number of years, but not, you know, 15 years.
So why are you building that press?
Because there are those people who we do have an audience for it. We know that we can sustain it, and our cost of production will drop.
Well, like with classical music, won't they die? And won't they? And the opera, won't they go away?
Well, at some point, but classical music has survived for a few hundred years, and I think it's got some time to go yet, and there are plenty of people to sustain it.
Go to the symphony someday and see how much gray hair you see.
Well, I do go to the symphony, and there's a lot
I know, Rick.
Gray hair.
I went to the symphony this past week, and I was surprised how many men were there. I was actually, you know, my mother even commented on that.
Well, you know, there are a lot of men there because their wives make them go.
Yeah, or girlfriends. Yeah, it impresses them.
How does a guy who's a PhD become such an anti-intellectual? I don't understand this. You don't
not
like
at all.
Opera and classical music, and you know,
opera. I'm the guy who runs 24 radio stations that play the entire Metropolitan Opera season on the air.
Much to your frustration, it seems to me.
Thank you very much, Rosemary.
I hardly think that you're a great fan of it.
No, I'm not.
Well, I rest my case.
But now, as soon as I'll tell you when I'll really start to like the opera, when we get to the point where, you know, you now get these electronic computer things, just like on the back of the seat in front of you. You get the English translation.
That's great.
That's coming. And that will make a difference.
It's not just coming. It is in places, right?
Not that I know.
In opera houses. In opera houses. Cars.
No, I'm talking about
cars and TV.
I'm talking about, no, on your radio.
Oh, on your radio.
Yeah.
Same thing. So, and now, so that's good.
Cool.
So the same.
I think opera is fabulous. It's like soap opera. And as soon as you make it accessible through language like this, yes, it will find a new audience. It is finding a new
audience. You're prejudiced.
By what? My Italian background?
My God. What a terrible thing to say.
Have we moved away from media commentary?
Well,
no, it's all together.
Okay, it's all of a piece.
Good.
Anyway, we've run out of time.
Oh, no.
What are we going to do?
This show should be an hour.
This show, some guy called in during the fun drive and said, this show should be 45 minutes.
That's a nice variation.
Absolutely. It's wonderful to have that. So we didn't get around to talking about the fact that the president has been ignoring print reporters while he's been bringing in these TV reporters.
He's smart. He's, you know.
Yeah, he knows what he's doing.
Because, you know, print reporters.
You do that?
Well, I guess.
Print reporters always say, gotcha, you know.
So and they put the context in the story right next to the president's own words.
And they edit. Yeah.
And they edit. Imagine that.
How annoying.
Well, how would you like it?
Well, I'm all in favor of editing.
If I were president, I wouldn't talk to
I guess
papers.
So. Well, on that thought,
me
folks,
neither.
We're going to have to leave you. When I become president, I'll ignore the press, too. All right.
You could. You're tall.
See you, folks.
I've even met a genius who swallows rattlesnakes. Now newspapermen meet such interesting people. like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ding-a-ling, ding-a-ling, ling-a-ling-a-ling. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors.